Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And, of course, that was the voice of Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together with the Brieflies, we strive with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing you every week another episode of what we hope is intelligent discussion about current events laced with humor and empathy. But we always strive to follow Brian's mantra of less is more. More or less. All right, let's start the day out by introducing the Brieflies like we always do. Zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is the voice of Indivisible Vachon, the Vachon Climate Action Group. In addition to chairing the Equity and Social Justice and Inclusion Committee of the Vachon Maury Community Council, our tireless defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Mr. Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Great to see the Brieflies here all gathered today. You know, I'm inspired by the topics you're planning to bring forward, Truman. I'm putting a spreadsheet together on how to get Biden to 270 to win in November.
So. Okay.
So our very own 518.
There you go. And, you know, today our historian extraordinaire is sojourning down in the Southern Hemisphere, that is in New Zealand. And is out in the bush today, so he can't join us. But filling in ably, I might add, is joining us here in the studio as executive director of the Vachon Chamber of Commerce. She's a 1995 graduate of Vachon High School, later received her bachelor's degree from Scripps College. From there, she worked in politics and organizing for 6 years in Washington, D.C., and at the GLBT Center in Colorado, among her other influential experiences. Amy Dreher is here in the studio. Good morning, Amy.
Hi, good morning.
We're really glad that you can fill in for Bruce. That's just terrific.
Thank you. I always have fun. And I need like a humorous little bio. I'm going to get that together. Because you guys always have the treetop flyer. I've got some ideas for grandiloquent titles.
Ah, okay. Well, we're ready. Yeah, just go ahead, Kevin. You say?
I just say bring it on, Amy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, sitting next to me here is two-time Fulbright scholar, not a half-bright scholar. This guy's pretty darn sharp. He's also a wedding officiant and singer, a former high-end women's shoe salesman. He's an excellent airplane partner and fellow treetop flyer and recently revealed Cajun Dancing Fool. Now, that I haven't seen. It is Craig Bellis.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, wait. Let me turn. What happened?
Hello, testing, mic check.
Oh, there you go. I see what happened.
You got to turn on the big red switch.
Yeah, you know what? There's a problem because we have one of our switches doesn't have a light. I mean, it's burnt out. And so I get confused.
Yeah, you and me both.
Do you?
Yeah. I do.
Oh, gosh. There's even a note that says, that light's burnt out. So use the next one. Gosh.
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning. It's Cajun, not KG. Well, it might be KG, too.
Oh, I thought I said Cajun.
You said both. So I appreciate that.
Cajun dancing. This got to be from the coop the other night, huh?
That's what motivated me to do that. Because, I mean, once you hear that, some of those Cajun, Zydeco bands,
you just got to go for it.
There's no chair dancing involved in that one.
You're up on your feet dancing. Well, I've seen you do the jitterbug, so I'd kind of like to see that. It should be interesting.
I have a new fundraising idea just really coming to life right now.
Dancing with a Star. You know, we thought of that. We actually have thought of that. It would be a great one. Well, I am a retired Boeing 737 captain and a flight instructor and recently reelected Vachon Airport Commissioner, DOV board member, and fellow treetop flyer with my pal here, Craig. I am Truman O'Brien. So good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Truman.
So let's check in. Hey, Kevin, what's going on with you today? This past week.
Oh, this past week. Well, a couple things. You know, I've got some construction projects going on around the house, minor, small things, but needed. There's the woodshed. We now actually have a woodshed, so I'm just being called out and behind, you know, how it goes. But yeah, we had the firewood that got relocated away from the house, which is a good thing, but under the tarp. And Susie said the tarp isn't going to cut it. So
it had to be a blue.
Yeah, what color is it?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Is it the Alaskan blue?
The tarp was white with a gold undertone, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Not. Don't want to skimp on the tarpish stuff. But also then the one of the, you know, I've been on the island. We've been on the island for like 30 years. And the Japanese maple tree that we moved and put into a 4x4 foot planter is now, the tree is like 15 feet around, and the planter after 30 years has fallen apart. And so now we have the new planter. The trick now is to get the tree levitated out of the old place and into the new planter, which is going to be a trick, but I hope we can find a solution. So,
you know, they make a machine
logistics
that does
and
it.
Construction yeah. challenges.
Yeah,
here
yeah no, I think that's yet another fundraising idea, though, is to tune in and see that happen.
Yeah.
Sell tickets to watch that go down.
That's right.
Get the videos rolling.
There you go. There you go. All right, Amy. So I know you've been just busy. My gosh, what in the world? What have you been doing this last week?
Yeah, boogieing. Well, I was saying that I am officially bitten by the spring fever bug, and I uncovered my Blackstone grill. I took advantage of the very active, you know, Vachon for All, Vachon marketplace, and mm-hmm. got a Blackstone grill last year and loved it so much and put it away for the winter. Put my nice cover on it, and I took the cover off, and oh no, I was like, the cover was not the right way to go for this. Ooh. So a little bit of grill cleaning. I'm joining Kevin in the house spruce up, yeah. which I think it's in our blood, which is great, because what a great segue to the Vachon Home and Garden Fair coming up on March 16th, right? We're all feeling it. But yes, that was, I've been very guilty of watching just Facebook reels of people grilling out on their deck on their Blackstone, and it got me.
There you go. Well, did you open it and it was a little furry inside? Is it?
Yeah, it was new forms of life,
yes,
discovering
yes.
new life and new civilizations.
Yeah. Occasionally in our refrigerator, we find biological experiments, you know, mm-hmm. occasionally mm-hmm. it's hidden behind something. Yeah, Kevin?
Hey, yeah, those grills can be amazing ecosystems. Ours turned into a squirrel, actually it's a chipmunk habitat.
Oh.
The chipmunks they loved it. You know, they could climb in the little drain, you know, where the ashes really? Come out or the heat, whatever. And the whole thing was full of moss. And I don't know how many chipmunks it took to fill up a grill, but yeah, that's what we had.
That's the name of the children's book. How many chipmunks does it take
to fill up
grill?
A grill? Yeah. I love it. I love it. Okay, Craig, how about you? I know you've got construction going on, too.
I do, but I'm not involved in it right now. I've got a wonderful contractor that we found that's doing a little bit of sheetrock, probably getting dust everywhere. You know how that is when that work is being done. But no, I had kind of an exciting week. I was hanging out with Zach Mann. Zach's the son of Joy and Chai Mann of the island, and he was making this movie for the last 2 weeks. Between his parents' house and the Vachon Center for the Arts Theater. And Lynette and I were extras in a few scenes down at his parents' house. And then my car, one of my cars was the star of a number of scenes. They had the most incredible drone and drone operators as I was driving up and down and around and through the trees, and they had it over the trees and under the trees, in front of the car and back of the car. And I saw some of the clips before the FX guys got a hold of it.
Oh, sure.
And it was really quite dramatic. I thought, I told them, I said, I tried to do my best creepy driving because the name of the movie is The Theater is Dead. It's a comedic horror show, for lack of a better description. So that was great. And I'm also in the process of getting ready for this Sunday at the Vachon High School is the Paul Caldwell Benefit Concert, which cranks out music scholarships to Vachon High School students. That's from 2 to 5 on Sunday the 3rd. There are, I think, 17 singer-songwriters from the island.
Wow.
All the creme de la creme are going to be we're playing either one or two songs each.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, it'll be we did it last year. I was the MC, and for some reason they invited me back. So
that's great.
That's what I'll be up to.
Fun. Well, as Craig well knows, we just finished up the annual inspection of our airplane.
Almost.
Well, yeah, you got a few things left to do. But basically what happens is you take the whole darn thing apart, and then you bring in this inspector who comes in and looks at everything and signs it off and says, okay, you're good for another year. But one of the things that we did, since we are pretty, we find it a pretty important tool, and that is the emergency locator transmitter, which is located on the airplane. All general aviation aircraft are required to have these now. And what they do is if you do crash and the G-force sets it off, and then they can locate you because it sends out the signal on the emergency frequency. And the one that we had in our little incident did not go off. And Craig said, oh, I just thought it was one of your normal landing instrumen, which is probably true. It's probably true. It just said, oh, that's another one of his. But we replaced that ELT with one of the new versions, and the new ones are really something. They send out a signal to a satellite, and just in the satellites triangulating alone, they can get you within 3 kilometers of your location. And if you do like we're doing, tie it into your built-in GPS on the airplane, it will locate you within 100 meters. So, and then they get within 100 meters, and they use that homing signal that we talked about earlier to find you.
And you got to be careful not to be wearing a high-vis jacket.
Exactly. They'll think you're part of the rescue crew. Oh, boy. That's another story. Yeah, Kevin?
I was thinking, Truman, 100 meters, you know, that's within shouting distance. So 3 kilometers thing is, you know, a little, not quite.
Yeah. That's why we sent up smoke signals.
Yeah, we did. And they used them. Yeah. They used them. They were looking at about, I think it was like 3.5 miles off from where we
across
actually
the valley.
Were. Yeah. But anyway, so that's what I've been up to. And I was pretty happy about getting that done. And so we got another year's worth of activity there. So today is a significant day. There are 308 days remaining in this to the end of this leap year. 12 days to daylight savings time, which happens on March 10th. 21 days left till spring, and there are 143 days left till Strawberry Festival.
Ouch.
On July 19th. coming up quick, Amy.
It is.
You better be ready.
We are.
All right. So today is National Pokemon Day. I've never, ever figured out what that Pokemon thing is all about.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. I didn't know that. I have to wake up my Snorlax. Tell them the good news.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go there. I'm afraid to ask if you really want to know. But no, I think that it's a kind of a cool thing, but I never did quite understand it. But you got to find
these.
You're
more in the pachinko era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, drop something down and let it flop around. All right, so today is a National Kahlua Day. I've never been a big Kahlua fan, but Big Breakfast Day. Now, I could go for that. International Polar Bear Day. I have no idea what that one is. And, of course, significant on Vashon, National Strawberry Day. Here you go. So looking at February 27th in history, I got this. This is going to be an all-musical Today in History. Because in 1814, that's not, we took a little trip.
Yeah, we took a little trip.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for next. But in 1814, Ludwig van Beethoven premiered his Symphony No. 8 in F major in Vienna. Okay, here it comes. Okay, I had to let it go to that part.
That is beautiful.
Isn't that something?
It is, and yeah. I think you pegged the needle.
I did. I blew it right off the meter here. So he did premiere that in Vienna in Riedensaal, I can't say it, Vienna. But anyway, it followed the Seventh Symphony, which he premiered 2 months earlier. And what's interesting is that he had grown quite deaf by this point. And so it was reported that, quote, the orchestra largely ignored his ungainly gestures and followed the principal violinist instead. Mm. That makes sense, huh? All right, so that was Beethoven, and that was in 1814. 1827, the very first Mardi Gras was celebrated in New Orleans. And...
my grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, 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 Aiko, Aiko, Ande, Giacomo Fino, Annale, Giacomo Finale.
Okay, so that was Aiko, Aiko. And although... this didn't actually come out until 1953 when, under the original title of Giacomo, it was written and released by James Sugarboy Crawford and his Cane Cutters. So that really is typifies the whole Mardi Gras experience. And this, it's been covered by everyone, but actually the song talks about a parade collision between two tribes of the Mardi Gras Indians, and it's a traditional confrontation that happens every year, I guess. So anyway, I thought that was kind of cool.
That is cool. Have you been to Mardi Gras?
I have never been to Mardi Gras.
Amy?
I have not been to Mardi Gras. I've been to St. Patrick's Day in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. That
which is, doesn't quite pin the needle, so to speak, in the same way. But yeah, it's a place to go to party.
That's for sure. Boy, Kevin, how about you?
I have been to Mardi Gras. My sister lived in who abandoned the Northwest in well, I don't know 40 years ago now, and moved to the Virgin Islands. And then a tremendous hurricane came through the Virgin Islands. Category 5 sat on the islands for like 24 hours, and that prompted her to move to New Orleans.
Oh,
and so she was in Algiers, right across the river, and she basically was there for 5 years. Now she's back in the Virgin Islands. But yeah, Susie and I visited during Mardi Gras, saw some interesting things sitting in basically, I can't remember the name of the place now, but we were at a window table. There was multiple bands playing, and we were watching people coming in, you know, to enjoy the festivities. And on the way out, we were watching people going out, including one person who walked his full tilt into a telephone pole. And didn't seem to faze them too much.
Yeah.
He was like, what was that?
Kind of shook it off, right?
That actually is. That's a great segue.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see the change in the crowd as things went on.
Lynette and I were there on the very first day of Mardi Gras, which is New Year's Eve. We got into Jackson Square about 10 minutes before New Year's Eve. It was packed shoulder to shoulder. The only place we could go was up on a telephone pole, actually a light pole. So we crawled up on the light pole, and that's where we were at the very start of Mardi Gras.
Oh, how cool is that? All right. So that was 1927, first Mardi Gras. 1919 was the very first public performance of Holst the Planets. That particular planet was Jupiter, the bringer of jollity. That was the number 4. You know, when it was first performed, it didn't really impress the critics very much. But the suite quickly became and has remained very, very popular and influential and widely performed throughout both the UK and internationally. So anyway, Holst the Planets, I thought that was, in fact, that's one of the most beautiful pieces, I think. Okay, last one. 1981, Paul McCartney and Steve Wonder recorded the single Ebony and Ivory.
keyboard. Oh Lord, why don't we?
All right, obviously, that was the two black and the white notes of the piano. This was recorded in, or was written actually, at Paul McCartney's farm in Scotland. And he got the idea from hearing Spike Milligan say, black notes, white notes, you need them both to play in perfect harmony, folks. So there you go.
But they weren't sitting next to one another.
They weren't.
They were on the other side of the world from one another.
Yeah, they were. That was one of those really interesting things, I think, where they one recorded it and then the other sang with it. But that was pretty cool. Anyway, so there was our musical Today in History. This is a first for the Brown Briefly, I think.
That was fun. I liked that.
Thanks. I kind of enjoyed it. Okay, so, hey, let's get into some of our local issues that we have. On Saturday, at the four-way stop here in downtown Vashon, which we occasionally have, there was a protest about Israel's invasion of Gaza. And I'm wondering what the Brieflies think about local demonstrations over international events. What's your opinion, folks? Anyone?
I think it's in the greatest American tradition. It's a First Amendment right of assembly and and petition and protest. There are issues if, you know, you're stopping traffic or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think it's a Vashon tradition.
I agree. My question is, though, what is their goal and what do they attempt to accomplish? That's my question on our little tiny Vashon Island here.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, what's your indivisible take?
I know everybody's, if you could see the Zoom, everybody's looking at me.
Exactly.
We've gone around on this question, but our question is, should we sponsor something on Vashon or should we encourage people to hop on a ferry and go into town where it's like more is more, right? If you're talking about people out on the streets. Of course, COVID, the ferry system, et cetera, et cetera. We really come down lately on the idea that we should be able to hear from people no matter where they're at, and offering an opportunity for people to participate on Vashon is more inclusive than, oh, you have to put a ferry boat in the way of your public, you know, a expression of your concerns. The value, in my view, isn't, let's see, there's a saying in activism, it's not the action, it's the reaction. It's fine to do an event, but the thing you care about is what happens as a consequence of what you've done. And the fact that conversations occur amongst people and they spread. And so the idea that the more point sources of raising awareness, the better, because the more conversations you start, the more diversity and the more pathways to basically spread awareness. So just a couple of thoughts on that for me.
And I completely agree. And those are the thoughts that I was looking for, because, you know, I'm thinking, what is that going to do internationally? You know, is it really going to have is somebody in Israel going to see the little tiny Vashon? No, they're not. But I think you're right, Kevin, that what it does is it starts a conversation and it makes the conversation spread to more people. So that is important.
Yeah, it's interesting too. You know, there's a lot to talk about, I think, in terms of, and Kevin may know more here about, you know, what's going on and what may happen in November of this year with our presidential election. You know, this whole issue, there's no way you can't say it isn't going to drive some conversations around our general election.
Okay.
And you know how Iran may be invested in how that conversation plays out, and what Biden's base is doing and thinking, and how motivated Biden's base is to turn out. Which, my perhaps incorrect assumption is that many of the folks who are participating in the ceasefire conversations are, if not solid voters for Biden's base, sort of fall into the more liberal wing perhaps of the Democratic Party. So I, you know, in terms of consequences, if we look at all of the ripples, that's what I'm most curious about, right? Is how do these drive what happens here in 2024 and what does that mean for democracy.
There you go. All right, good. That was a discussion I was hoping we would have. Thank you, folks, everybody. Okay, next up, recently in the Beachcomber, they published a King County roads query about change the speed limit on the main highway in a couple of different places. And the comment period unfortunately ended yesterday. But my question is, did you comment? And if you didn't, or if you did, what would your opinion be of the speed limit change? And if you need more information about where that is, I happen to have it. So.
I saw Kevin's hand up.
Kevin.
I did not comment. I will say that now, being a retired person on Vashon, I have a whole different outlook than a commuter on Vashon, which is, of course, what I used to do 5 days a week. I'm all for safety and my lifestyle now. I have to allow a lot of time to get to the ferry boat, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm getting there like two boats ahead. So if I get there 2 minutes late, it's like not a big deal these days. Maybe with three boat service, that dynamic will change. But bottom line, I think safety first.
Well, I what I thought they should do is they should change the speed limit northbound to 60 and then change the speed limit southbound to 35 or 40. Because, you know, you're like coming it. Home, there's no mm-hmm. big rush, but man, you got to make that ferry no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. So,
well, as someone who lives in a theoretical 25 mile per hour zone in Burton, I'm kind of bummed they're going to spend all this money to put up new signs because there is no enforcement. There's no traffic law enforcement on Vashon. And so it is, you know, to me, remains very much theoretical.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I was just going to say the speed limit, you get online on social media and you hear or you read the comments about changing the speed limit, and they go all over the place. But the one argument that drives me nuts is, oh, we shouldn't change the speed limit. Nobody follows the speed limit anyway.
Well, that's true.
And I go, that kind of would apply to all of our laws.
Exactly.
I guess we could just dispense with everything.
Right. The Cormac McCarthy, was it No Country for Old Men?
Yes.
Laws are only there for people who break them.
That's right. Exactly. My feeling is that you got to give the speed limit room to breathe. Because there are people who will always exceed the speed limit.
Always. Yeah.
By 10, 15, 20 miles. Bank Road, I've always said, is a classic example.
Yep.
Because I go down Bank Road all the time and I swear to God, nobody knows that the speed limit all the way down Bank Road is 35 miles an hour.
It sure is. Yeah. Sure is. And I definitely do that occasionally at 40. I have to tell you, though, you said that there was no traffic control here on the island. Our mentor, Brian Brown, tells a story that shortly after he moved here, he was leaving town out of the south end of the city here, and he was doing 40, and he got pulled over, and the cop said, you were speeding, and Brian goes, no, it's 40. The guy goes, it's 25 until you get down to the quality food or quality seafood. Then it goes to 40. He gave him a ticket.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was every time I drive by that, by Kathy's Corner, I think of Mr. Lopez, who is my student driver teacher, and I was guilty of the same infraction, mm-hmm. and he gave me a little tap and said, Amy, it's not 40 until you get to the sign.
That's
every
right.
time.
Every time.
Every time.
My last speed limit was on Bank Road. speed ticket. Yeah, yeah, speed ticket was on Bank Road, and it was at the bottom of one of those long hills.
Yes, of course.
And I took it to the judge, and I said, it's not fair that he'd be sitting at the bottom of the hill when you've got the car totally in coast and you're picking up speed.
Yeah.
But that was, I don't know, 25 years ago.
Did he buy it?
He reduced it. Except I had to spend an hour waiting, you know.
Of course. Well,
what's your best story?
Well, I think the Cove Road speed trap at the bottom of the hill by, you know, just where the gravel pit road is another one of those things. And that is on the way home, you know, for a lot of folks, because you're going down the hill at that point. But I am curious, you know, I've heard the logic that says the speed limit changes as soon as I can see the numbers on the speed limit sign ahead. I'm seeing some heads shaking.
Mm-mm. No, you can ask a police officer in Oregon. We were on driving down 101, and we got caught in one of the little town speed traps, and he reminded me that, no, ma'am.
Starts at the sign. At the sign. Yep.
That does make total sense, yes.
Well, I got one speeding ticket story. I can go ahead and share this one with you. I was in...
I think the statute of limitations is probably...
It's way, way past, yeah. I was a senior in high school with my family, my father and my mother and our exchange student, and we're in Louisiana, beautiful Louisiana. And I was following this car on a very hilly road. So it was very steep going up, very steep coming down. Going up, he was slow to 50. Going down, he would speed up to 70 or more. And I'd been following this guy for miles, and he was driving me nuts. Finally, I got to the top of the hill, and there was a big, long valley. I said, okay, now's my chance. And I kicked that baby up. There's a big old 98 Ford Oldsmobile, Olds 98. And I kicked that thing up to about 80. And when I hit the bottom of the valley, there was a cop car. Mm-hmm. And it was that, he was that classic fat guy with the shiny sunglasses, pulled us over and said, well, you got to follow me into town to talk to the magistrate. And of course, that was probably his brother-in-law. And you had to pay it in cash. You know, it was $200 or whatever it was. Anyway, that was my speeding story. So it was a classic. Yeah, Kevin?
Okay, well, this isn't a speed ticket story, although I do have those. But this is when I got pulled over, sort of like, why? So this was... in the winter time, it was probably January or February, a very cold, brisk day, but you know, sunny. Some of like February days, the sun's out, but it's like, you know, down around freezing. And so I'm driving to work, and I had a Spider 124, Fiat 124 Spider, and it was a beautiful car to have the top down. And so, you know, it was no rain, so put the top down, dressed up in, you know, my wool coat and the hat and everything. And I'm sure the cop behind me was like, this does not look right. You know, see something, say something. So he had to say something to me. he pulled me over just, I think, to say, hey, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm just fine.
I'm just fine. Thank you. I'm enjoying this sun.
Enjoying the day.
There you go. Well, let's see. Anybody got anything else local here that we can cover?
Well, there's a rumor, as there oftentimes are on Vashon.
No.
About Sound Publishing.
Oh.
Tell us more.
Sound Publishing supposedly has filed for bankruptcy.
No.
Actually, the parent of Sound Publishing, let's put it that way. I have not addressed this issue with Mr. Bruel or Elizabeth. So I was just wondering if anybody knew anything about that at all.
No, haven't heard a word.
So what you may be saying here is that we are starting a new nonprofit on Vashon.
Yeah.
Vashon Publishing Company. Well, you know, Beachcomber was locally owned for quite a while.
Sure.
Yeah.
501c3 coming up.
Yeah, we got to have it. There's no way we can lose that paper. Right.
By the way, I looked on, this is completely off the subject, but I looked on online the other day, was looking for... There was I can't remember the website, but it said nonprofits on Vashon. And it was a list of all of the 501c3s or 501 whatever's on Vashon. Holy cow. I knew there was a bunch, but it was like this 200 something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, two pages worth of, and some of them are pretty obscure. But interesting. All right, so national. So how about the Fannie Willis disqualification stuff that's going on. Now, what's the latest on that, Craig? You've been following that?
Well, there's a hearing, I think, that's going on right now. Kevin, I don't know if you've been monitoring that. Sometimes when you're at home via Zoom, you are watching that. Do you know if that hearing is ongoing?
I'm not paying attention to that right now. I'm still working on the Biden 270 to win spreadsheet.
Good. That whole case, initially when it came down, I said to myself, the disqualification is nonsense. I mean, the fact that she and a prosecutor that she appointed might be having a dalliance, if you will, is not grounds for disqualification. And I knew it, but it is grounds for a lot of salacious kinds of testimony and press and, mm-hmm. and whatnot. But the problem now is that they're holding a small short hearing with this one witness who kept claiming that he had attorney-client privilege and he wouldn't answer a bunch of questions. And the defense, excuse me, the moving party, Trump, they say, well, we want him to come back because he doesn't have attorney-client privilege and he should have answered those questions. And I think the judge agreed with that. Mm. So now he's being asked those questions again. And the bottom line is they're trying to establish that Fannie Willis and what was his name? Bradley? I can't remember the fellow's name.
Yeah.
That they perjured themselves. Now, perjury is a crime.
Yeah.
And it could throw a real monkey wrench. I'm unless something really weird occurs, I'm inclined to think that the judge isn't going to disqualify her. But this is as close as I could see them getting
to it.
Hmm. Right. Something that actually wasn't anticipated at the beginning of the motion. Right. It kind of came up in the middle of it.
Hmm. And so this, again, it will be up to just a judge, correct, as to whether or not.
Yeah, this is a pretrial motion that typically you wouldn't take up on appeal until after the entire case was done. So.
Okay.
So let's hear it for elevating the recognition of the appearance of impropriety is very important.
Well, you know that there's a movement to make illegal sex entertainment. What's the word for it? Sex as entertainment. I mean, have you seen that?
No, I have not.
Recreational sex. That's what it is. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Say more.
There's a whole movement among some of the Republicans in Congress to ban or to make it illegal to have recreational sex.
What? How do you define recreational sex?
Good question.
So that would be sex that is not for the purpose of procreation, which the Catholic Church has long been telling us is a mortal sin.
There you go.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it a mortal sin or just a garden variety
No,
sin?
I think it's a mortal sin. You take me back to my altar boy days.
Yeah. Oh, wait, Kevin might know.
Well, I don't know, but I was going to say that as soon as something like that goes through, then we're going to hear all the stories about all the members of Congress, you know, who engage in that kind of activity.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. It just goes. It's sort of like all the stories we're now hearing about the folks who, like, they're running the anti-gay conservative get-together, and now they have been since multiple instances of approaching people of like gender.
Yeah.
In a sexual way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We all know that this is not about behavior. This is about control of domestic labor.
There you go.
That is what all laws around reproduction come to, is capitalist control of domestic labor.
I think that's probably appropriate. Indeed.
Yeah. Gently progressive opinion? Does
yes.
that count as
yes,
not the opinion of the voice of Vashon?
Vashon, yes. Yeah, where's that disclaimer that we have to read? All right. So Trump... Oh boy, you know I just want to be able to turn on my computer some morning and not see the name Trump, just once. That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen for a while. I found this article that was put out by Atlantic Magazine, and they went through and just took all of the. All of the indictments and things that Trump is facing. And they started with the New York State fraud thing, which is now is complete. And he was fined, $355 million and a three-year suspension of doing business in New York. And his sons were two-year suspension of doing business in New York. So do you know any more about that, anyone, about where that's gone and what's – I mean, he's going to have to pay it one way or the other.
Well,
he
pays – or I should say that's accumulating interest at $114,000 a day.
A day.
And it's up, as you probably know, to somewhere around $460 million right now.
Yeah.
But he has made a motion here in the last day or two, I think yesterday, to waive the bond on appeal. Normally, if you have a judgment brought against you, a civil judgment, and you appeal it, you have to
post the amount of money you owe with the court or with or a bond that you basically a loan where you have to put up about 10% and pay an exorbitant interest rate. And he's made a motion that he shouldn't have to pay that in order to be able to appeal.
Yeah, because he's so wealthy, right? No, I think that's what he said, yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's so special.
Oh, that too.
So that will that could be decided in pretty short order, but if it's not granted, he will not have an appeal unless he can post all or most of that that judgment.
So at what point, because I do not believe that he has any intention of paying it ever, at what point does not paying that actually have a penalty associated with it?
Well, you have the right to attach. You can garnish his wages and you can attach his property.
Yeah. Which are probably not in his name.
Well, that is oftentimes the case with any kind of civil judgment, and that's what private investigators are all about. They find the way to win their way through shell corporations and whatnot in order to be able to get to assets that can be attached and satisfy judgment.
So theoretically saying, let's just be real theoretical and say his net worth is $200 million, which is half of what he owes total. So he's still holding $200 million that he owes New York. Again, I'm always just kind of, what is this really actually going to accomplish? Assuming he has no intent of paying, what is this going to accomplish?
Well, if he has $200 million that they can find, he's going to have to pay a big chunk of that. That's a civil case. It's a civil judgment. And in the American system of justice, typically the only remedy is money. But because this is sort of a quasi-civil, not really criminal, but brought by the Attorney General, they're also able to bar him from, doing business in the state of New York and taking loans in the state of New York and doing all these other things. It is emblematic. It's not just a shallow, empty judgment. You have generally 10 years in which to satisfy the judgment, and you can satisfy the judgment after the individual has died. It
really?
Survives, yes.
Wow.
In the one case, the both parties, Trump and the plaintiff, are elderly. The estates of both parties can still continue on to try to collect that judgment.
So they can be, it can still be owed even after he's gone, right?
Correct.
Wow. Well, that's interesting to know. Yeah, Kevin.
Craig, isn't the plaintiff in this case the state of New York?
It is. It is the state of New York.
Yeah. And so long live the state of New York.
That's right. That's right.
And I think another way that Mr. Trump is being treated with kid gloves is that he's given 30 days to post this bond, which I don't know, Craig, if you know one way or the other. I thought I heard that that was not a normal provision.
That I'm not sure of. Sometimes you have 30 days in which to file your appeal, and thus you would have 30 days in which to post a bond. But it does sound like this is an extension beyond that point. So I'm not as certain about that one.
So I think the countdown clock of that 30 days started a couple of days ago. Maybe,
yeah, it did. I heard that, definitely. So the second thing on this in this article is the... in Manhattan, the defamation and sexual assault case, and that one is also complete with an $83 million fine, basically. And the same deal applies on that one, right, Craig?
Yeah, the only difference being that's a private individual who's bringing the action, not the state. But it is that's a classic money judgment. And
does he pay her, or does he have to pay the court to appeal?
Well, in order to
appeal,
it's got to be held basically in trust by the court.
Okay, by the court. Yeah. Okay.
So the question is, how many Gold LeMay sneakers do you need to sell to pay off a $500 million judgment, or total of $500 million in judgments?
Well, you don't need too many sneakers if you've got millions of followers who are, enamored with Mr. Trump and are willing to donate a few dollars here and there.
And maybe a Russian oligarch or two?
That would be helpful from his standpoint.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Those sneakers are absolutely gauche.
Oh, you got to see the Saturday Night Live routine on that. It is hilarious.
I have not seen it yet. I did see that someone was putting out a gold diaper that I thought was pretty good with an American flag on it and a big T. Yeah, Kevin?
Amy, the answer is 1.253 million.
Okay, that seems achievable. I think Mr. Nike would agree that you can sell a million sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's at $399 a pair. Yes. Yeah. So
of course, Nike's going to have their cut. So.
Right. Oh, Nike's not involved in it.
No, these are straight out of
China.
Yeah, Wuhan.
Okay.
One other thing I have to ask about this E. Jean Carroll, right? This is the second go-round for defamation of Ms. Carroll by Mr. Trump. And the second the evidence basically for the second trial was after the presidency, but I'm not sure if there's going to be a third trial. Is the 83 million enough to actually keep Trump's mouth shut on this?
I think that he's probably said a few things already that would support a third case. This could be the gift that keeps on giving.
It's a cash machine.
Yeah, the ATM machine. Yeah, exactly. This begs the question, though, between all of these penalties and judgments, who gets paid? And these are all separate jurisdictions and all separate courts, and it's kind of a first come, first serve.
Well, it is. I was wondering about that. Yeah. There's no prioritization there.
It's not like a bankruptcy. Now, if he filed bankruptcy, which, God, I can't imagine a former president would file bankruptcy. How many bankruptcies? Do you know, Kevin? I think four.
At least three.
Oh, no, I think it's 100 or so over the span of his business life. Many bankruptcies. And in a bankruptcy, you would consolidate all of these things, and the bankruptcy court would determine which ones could be discharged, and if not, how you dole out the funds.
Didn't I hear that Rudy Giuliani, if he files for bankruptcy, does not, he still has to pay the 183 or whatever.
Some debts are not dischargeable in bankruptcy.
Yeah.
It's all part of the code, bankruptcy code.
Wow. All right. So the next one is the in Manhattan again. It's the hush money case where he's charged with paying $130,000 to Stormy Daniels. It is a hush money deal. And that one is supposed to go to trial on March 25th. And the judge, Juan Merchant, said that on February 15th, it's going to go. So you know, anybody know any more about that one?
I'm just going to say 27 days. We should add that to the countdown climber to Strawberry Festival. And
yeah, there you go. We will. We'll add that to the...
No, just when's the next trial? When's the next trial date? We keep a running,
total.
Tally.
Yeah,
it's a good thing it's leap year. We're going to need every day we can get.
He is.
Exactly right. That's an interesting case because a lot of people go, meh. That's it's a payment to the Stormy Daniels and this other woman. It's no big deal. But in fact, it is a big deal. The allegation is that it was to affect the election. And it was the payment was made within a day of the famous, tape of him coming out of the bus.
Yeah.
The remarks he did that I thought was the end of his candidacy. And it was frankly just the rocket boost they needed to keep going.
Exactly.
Which still blows my mind.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. All of it. It's heartbreaking. And just, what is it, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 million, how much does it take to change our hearts and minds about, who we want leading our culture and our world?
Exactly.
And it's heartbreaking.
It is indeed. All right, one more. The Mar-a-Lago.
If I could jump in on this one. I forget a little bit now about the details of the case, so don't quote me too closely. But I think the notion here is that some of these accusations are crimes committed to cover up other crimes. And that's what elevates this to a felony level.
Exactly.
And the notion that it's, it's evidence of the Trump crime family, if I could use those terms. but basically a cascading set of inappropriate actions that really elevate this case to something that is pretty important, even though each infraction you might go, oh, recreational sex, yeah, happens all the time, and people get paid for that. But in this case, yeah, I'm with Craig. I think it's going to have more impact than people realize.
Yeah, well, I mean, and hopefully just get back to talking. I'd love to just have a good old conversation about how best to manage the business of our country and fiscal policy and, you know, and how we operate in the world and you know, good old fashioned 80s kind of stuff.
Get back to reality, for sure. Okay, the next one is the Mar-a-Lago documents thing. Anybody have any comments about that? I mean, it looks like the Judge Eileen Cannon or Aileen Cannon is attempting to stretch it out as long as possible. To, again, maybe to get it past the election. So, anybody?
Well, it is scheduled for May 20th, I think, still right now. Mm-hmm. Although. Trump has made multiple arguments that the thing should be dismissed or should be continued. I think he has 6 or 7 arguments that he's making right now that are going to come up. That it's the old deal about throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks, if anything.
Or ketchup, as it were.
Or ketchup, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. Or like those videos of the guys throwing the Velveeta. Slices of cheese. there's all of those. She's made some interesting rulings in this case. So it's just anybody's guess as to what's going to happen.
What are the odds, though, Craig, that she gets recused? Is that a possibility still?
Always a possibility, but I don't think so. I mean, not what? Because she was appointed by Trump?
No, because of some of the stupid.
They've been remedied to a certain degree. Some of them have. Okay. At least the first one. I don't think she's not going to recuse herself.
Oh no, of course not.
And I don't think that she's going to be forced to. The special prosecutor is willing to take his chances with her, because it is a pretty open and shut case. If you can get past the initial motions,
all the emotions that they've tried to throw at it, right? Mm-hmm. We talked
to Kevin.
If I could jump in on this one. The heartbreak. I think Amy used that word earlier. You know, I think it was a 1 in 4 chance that the draw of Judge Cannon, but you know, that's what we're living with now. The thing that is always a mystery to me in this case. Is it seems that the notion of the content of the classified documents becomes somehow at issue in this case. And the way I read it is you had the classified documents in your possession. I don't care if it's confidential classified or, you know, the details of the Russian submarine program. Right. In my opinion, my assessment is I don't quite understand why the contents of the documents makes one iota of difference either way. But it does seem to complicate the case substantially. And my sense is that that is somehow responsible for some of these delays, getting access to attorneys that have the appropriate clearances granted so they can deal with the classified documents. So just a question in my mind, but certainly just one more thing to slow things down.
You know, and Kevin, you and I both have dealt with classified information before. I mean, we both held security clearances, and it just boggles my mind that anybody could even question that whole process. Granted, some of the things that were classified were like, what? That was classified? You know, I mean, that was on the news the other day. But it's the context in which it was used, you know.
Yeah, well, and there's another important thing about that in my world, and maybe the same in yours. I think it's universal. You know, mistakes are made. And the idea that when I had a clearance, there were like 3 strikes and you were out.
Oh, yeah.
But those strikes had to be intentional, right? It's like, oh, darn, I ended up with this thing in my briefcase. I brought it right back. Okay, it didn't leak. It was always in my possession. Okay, do better next time, right? So that's the difference we're seeing. But of course, the parallels are drawn between not only Vice President Biden when he was in that role, Vice President Pence, and Trump. Pence and Biden basically towed the line. Mistakes were made. Let's get this cleared up right away. Trump, of course, exactly the opposite.
I hate to play the devil's advocate or the stereotypic lawyer, but these are complicated and nuanced issues. I mean, you, in any other case, you're not going to rely on the prosecutor to tell you how serious the documents are, or to put in a description, which is what typically happens in these. You put in a description of it, with leaving out all of the details. The way you word that description can be can prejudice the case in favor of the government, which is what you want to do. One side wants to prejudice the jury or the judgment in their favor, and the other, but I mean, can unduly prejudice. So the defense should get an opportunity to you know, check those descriptions out or see what's in there. And it is, I mean, there is a procedure set up for it, but it takes time.
Okay. That does help explain the nature of why that's an important attribute to the case.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Okay, so we there are two more, the election subversion, which we kind of talked about in Fulton County, and then there's the Department of Justice election subversion, which is in Washington, D.C. So those are two separate cases. One is a federal case and one's a state case. Is that correct, Fred? Craig?
Yeah, Fred here.
Fred, sorry.
Fred Flintstone.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. The federal case, the big case in D.C., that's brought by the special prosecutor. That's the one that everybody's kind of got their eye on. And that's the one we're waiting for the Supreme Court to come back with its opinion as to whether or not they're going to take the appeal on whether the president's immune.
Right.
And the general philosophy, although you never know, is the longer they take, the more likely it is that they're going to kick it out. They're not going to take it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because what they're doing is they're giving one or two judges a right to write a dissent. Which has taken time. So,
well, that's very interesting. I was not aware of.
Well, and I was frustrated by the time it took the appeals court, the D.C. appeals court, if I remember right, to actually come up with their. And then when the report came out from them, the, I don't know, 400 and whatever page thing, it was like open and closed case. All the evidence you need, Supreme Court, here's the historical sightings, here's why you can just trust us to go with this. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I'm happy now.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So we'll see how long things take.
All right, so my last topic was international, and this could be a whole show. But just a quick comment about Trump's threat to abandon the NATO nations and Congress's abandonment of Ukraine. Just recently, you know, that Sweden joined NATO and was finally approved by, was it Hungary, I think, or I can't remember who the approved.
I think it was Hungary, yeah.
Yeah, they finally approved.
Yeah, after Turkey, then Hungary.
Yeah, they caved finally. You know, I spent 18 months in Europe, and I worked with a bunch of these NATO folks. And the whole reason for NATO beginning was mainly to hold Germany down, to keep them from rising up again. But it is morphed into a much, much larger entity. Kevin?
I just want to say Article 5, if any one nation is attacked, the other nations come to their aid. The only time it's been invoked is in the United States after 9/11 and the airplanes flew into the Twin Towers in New York. NATO AWACS airplanes flew flight control over our country.
Yep.
They did not send us a bill.
No.
They just did it.
That's the way that's supposed to work all around.
That's what we need.
Okay, so hey, we got next week's shows, March 5th. Craig, you're hosting. You got Greg Nichols coming, huh?
Yeah, Greg, former county councilman for Vashon for four terms and two-time mayor of Seattle, is going to be here. He's going to talk about numerous subjects, including transportation and maybe his dealing with Xfinity and Comcast. He's rather adamant on that recently.
Oh,
so some of us can share our experiences there.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so for Kevin and Bruce out in New Zealand, Craig, Amy, and myself, thanks a lot for tuning in, and we will see you all next week.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is